This podcast is brought to you by Pragmatic Solutions, the leading iGaming PAM platform with a modular approach, including many benefits like a fast, secure, and scalable API-based platform integrated with all major third-party products and services. Make sure you head over to Pragmatic Solutions and join our smart thinking.
All right, Sami coming on. Sami, I've known you for a very long time, and this is a very typical thing of friends that you have in Malta, that we met each other so long ago that I can't remember the first time we met. Can you remember the first time you met me?
I remember you being an organizer of different events, so it could be something to do with that. But I cannot pinpoint the exact time because we've both been here in Malta for so long.
It's so typical with people that you, with friends that you have here. It's like, yeah, it's really hard to say when you met for the first time. But Sami, you're one of the few people that actually been here longer than I have. You moved to Malta 2009. You've been consistent. You lived here ever since. I moved here 2011. 12 years later, we're still here as well. So we're holding our Swedish flag high here in Malta. So happy to have you here in the studio today.
Thank you very much. I'm really honored to be here. Just a quick story from my point of view of this podcast. This was during the weird COVID phase when there was semi lockdowns and everything. And me and my family was located in the island of Gozo, here in Malta. And I found your podcast, and I was like, yes, finally someone that start talking about the industry a bit. And that, since everybody was a bit secluded from normal social interactions, that kept me updated about what was going on in the industry. And you had really great guests, and it's been nice to see this podcast develop with going to the weekly news, and you talk about different markets. So I just want to tell you that really well done, great work. I think awesome. The whole industry is happy about this.
Awesome, Sami. You're a man of good taste. I'll give you that. Thank you for that.
You deserve it.
Thank you, Sami. So recently, you reached out to me because you wanted to write this article that we published on Next.io titled "Are Tier 1 Operators Abandoning Affiliates?" And it's this kind of trend that is taking place right now where the big major regulated operators are treating their affiliates not as well as they used to, perhaps. So that's what we're going to talk about today. But Sami, can you just start about talking a little bit more about your background? I know you've been both an affiliate, you've been an affiliate manager, so you've been on kind of both sides of the aisle. But can you talk about the background of yourself to start with?
Absolutely. So my gaming background goes quite way back. It started back in 2003. I was working in a land-based casino in Sweden. So I got to learn all the different games and
Casino Cosmopol.
Exactly. In
Sweden. What did you do there?
I was a dealer first for all the games: baccarat, blackjack, roulette, and poker.
What a way to start!
I mean, I started from the real casino, so to say.
Yep.
Then I was working a bit part time as the inspector dealer, looking at after the dealers and checking that everything was running smoothly. Anyway, that led me to playing poker, and playing poker eventually led me to come to Malta. And then I started working in 2009-10 in the industry here, and I basically started from scratch. Started working as a outbound agent, calling players with welcome calls and explaining the product. So really from the beginning of the ladder, you could say. That led me to working within affiliation. I was an affiliate manager. I've been head of affiliates. I've been also working with an overall responsibility of different white label casinos, where basically took care of most things. Also been head of operations, where it even led to a bit of an unfortunate situation where the company was financially struggling, and we had to let all the staff go. and I was left on my own and basically ran an online casino doing all the roles by myself for 6 months. So we had a third party company doing support, payments and fraud, and then I did the rest basically.
Oh my god.
CRM, affiliation, VIP, casino management.
Oh my god.
So nothing that I would recommend for anybody to do. It was really hard, but I learned a lot.
Yeah.
So I would say that I have a good 360 overview of the whole industry and how it is to be an operator. And now the last 3 years, I've been on the affiliate side of things. So I have started two affiliate companies, and I'm also a representative of a UK-based company that focus on cloud optimization. So basically they help big companies with reducing spend and optimizing their cloud, basically.
Amazing, yeah, Sami. So recently, as mentioned, you wrote this contributor article called "Are Tier 1 Operators Abandoning Affiliates?" Can you talk about what was the premise of this article? Why did you write it, and what message did you want to get across here?
Yeah, so lately there's been some changes, especially with the top tier operators, where they implemented some new clauses that led to a lot of affiliate accounts being closed down. And there was a lot of noise from affiliates on social media and different forums where affiliates were complaining about what was happening, and because they were basically losing income or a revenue source. So I thought that this is something that needs to be discussed a bit, so it doesn't just fly under the radar, because this is something that affecting many things in the industry. When you write an article, you can't go into too much detail, but here in the podcast, we can discuss a bit more, because there's two sides of the story. There's the affiliate point of view, but there's also how the operators look at things and why things are happening, basically.
Yeah. And so if we start by the affiliate perspective, then so let's say the perspective that you talk, if you put on your affiliate that now then, so you feel that many of the tier one, the regulated operators are including and introducing predatory terms to the affiliates. It's very difficult for affiliates to trust the operators, I suppose, on the regulated side, and they are more kind of drawn into the unregulated space by operators over there that are offering much better terms and so on. Can you bring the affiliate perspective to this issue?
Yeah, so if we look at it from a solely an affiliate perspective, so what can be in some cases is that an affiliate have dedicated a lot of time and effort to make their website rank basically on SEO if that's what they focus on. And then they have decided to send these clicks, these players to these casinos that at the time was promoting the deals as lifetime revenue share deals. So their mindset was that they will earn revenue share on these players as long as they're active. And the day that income stops is when the player stops playing and nothing else, because that was what was agreed to at that time. So that's pretty much the how the affiliates see it. And then when something is taken away from you, that can make you angry or sad or upset, because you have dedicated and worked hard for something, then suddenly disappears.
Yeah.
So that's, in a nutshell, the affiliate perspective.
Yeah, right. And so the agreements that you would have with the operators, these like legacy deals, if you want to call them, if they are signed contracts, isn't there like a legal standing to these contracts? Like, can't you bring this, if the contract are being changed just overnight like that without your consent, isn't there like a legal implication to that?
Well, when you look at the affiliate terms and conditions, there's always a clause that says that the operator can can modify or add or change the terms whenever they please and however they want.
Okay.
Without really any kind
of. So it's not actually an agreement. It is a one-sided agreement from the like basically commitment from the affiliate to the operator and not anything.
Yeah.
Not anything else.
But we also have to keep in mind that when these deals were done, everything looked a bit different. The market was in a different place. The operators have different objectives and goals. They were, many of them were small. They were startups. Their goal was to grow as fast as possible, get a lot of market share. So the focus was on growth and maybe not as much on profitability. Mm. And affiliation was a good marketing channel to get more players, to get visibility, branding, combined with all the other marketing. So I don't think that there was any bad intentions when those deals were done, because they were done at the time when that seemed reasonable.
Yeah.
Then, when we discuss the operator point of view, we can...
Yeah. Exactly. So from the affiliate perspective, as an affiliate, you've been working hard to build your SEO. You generated the traffic that you worked hard to generate, and as you mentioned in the article, perhaps there is a change in Google's algorithm which makes it difficult to attract X amount of first deposit customers for a while, which then justifies the operator to close down the entire account because of this. So it's like from the affiliate side, a lot of things is perhaps outside of their control in the success, in the consistent success that they bring to their partner. And so as an affiliate, you feel that you are being unfairly treated basically by the operators. So if you don't turn it around, then what would be the perspective from the operator to why they are including these more, according to the predatory terms in affiliate contracts?
Yeah, so I would say that there's three different scenarios why operators would do these changes. The first one is that the operator is actually struggling. They have issues to be profitable, and they have to cut costs. So they start cutting costs where costs can be cut. And one of the channels where you can save money is to get rid of some of the affiliate deals that are not bringing you any value currently.
Yeah.
Because they brought value at some point.
Yeah.
But if they're not bringing any new players now, they're just costing money.
Right.
And if you have the possibility to change those terms, that's one way how you can do it.
Right.
The second scenario is that the company is doing well. They're doing a lot of profit. They're fine. But they want to make more.
Yeah.
And again, that's a one cost that you can get rid of. And the third scenario is that you're looking at doing an exit. You basically want to sell the company. So you have gone through the startup phase. You have grown to a certain size. You are noticing the changes in the industry and the markets. It's getting tougher. Maybe it's time to look at selling. And basically what happens then is that you're trimming the fat, you want to get rid of the costs so that the selling price get as high as possible. And one of the first things that you would do is to cut some of those affiliate deals that cost more than good than they do good at the moment.
Right. Yeah, it's an interesting perspective as you mentioned these three causes. So perhaps a lot of tier two operators, especially in Europe, are struggling today. Trying to find profitability in the regulated market space. At the same time, you have the big incumbents, the massive operators who are now operating in a more mature market that isn't really growing, in Europe at least, that isn't really growing that much year by year. So instead, they're looking at becoming more efficient and lean as an organization in order to increase profit. And then as you point out, whenever you make an exit, it's all about minimizing cost and so on.
Exactly. And just to add one thing, what can happen in one of those companies is that someone outside the affiliate department, usually outside, is looking through the numbers, and they're saying, what are these costs? Why are we paying these affiliates this money month after month? And the affiliate department say that these are lifetime revenue share deals. And basically they're saying, well, that ends now. There is no more term of lifetime revenue share deals, because that was done in a different time when the whole market was in a different scenario, and the company had a different objective. The focus was on growth.
Yeah.
And now we're looking at profitability. And if you're not bringing any more value, then the fun stops there.
Yeah, for sure. So in the first and the second explanation of companies struggling, and the first thing they would do is to cut these, according to them, then the unnecessary affiliate lifetime revenue share costs. And then in the second explanation, in the kind of incumbents that are just generally trying to become more profitable by becoming leaner, do you feel that these actions are short-term thinking? But will they actually be able to stay profitable and become more profitable in the long term by turning the back against the affiliates? What do you think?
I think that these bigger operators, or these that we're basically discussing here with that have added these terms, they are looking at working more with the bigger companies, the big affiliate companies, and they are not affected by these changes either.
All right.
Because they have the power, they have the size to implement their own terms on top of the normal standard terms and conditions, which basically protects them from untagging players.
All right.
They operate untagging the players, or and they also have the possibility to do their own audits. They can check that these players are still tagged to the affiliate accounts, which medium to smaller affiliates, they don't have that opportunity to do. So it's important to point out that the big affiliates in the industries are not affected by these changes. It's more the small, medium-sized ones. I don't think that these operators are looking to stop using the marketing channel completely. It's more that they're shifting towards working more or only with the bigger ones. That's their main objective.
Why would they do that? I would imagine that it's more expensive to work with the bigger affiliates.
The deals or the agreements with big affiliates are usually quite expensive, and we can discuss that soon in a bit more detail. But one benefit with working with the big ones is that a lot of affiliate programs work with no negative carryover deals, which means that the operator takes the full cost of winners. So if you have, say, 500 small affiliate accounts and you have a few big winners here and there, you take the loss as an operator. The affiliate obviously doesn't pay for that, but you still have to pay the other affiliate accounts that are making money.
Okay.
But if you work with a big account that has a lot of players, those winners will deduct some of the rev share that you have to pay to the affiliate.
Okay.
So in a way, it can make sense to work only with big accounts instead of having loads of small accounts, because that can be a factor too.
Okay. So in the grand scheme of things, then with many players, that that final kind of number that you need to pay to the major affiliate, it actually balances itself out a bit. So even if the deal itself is more expensive with a major affiliate, the fact that there isn't the factoring in the negative carryover, then actually that final number, it's lower or the same as working with a smaller or medium affiliate.
Exactly. That does do some kind of impact, because you're not taking the full cost because you have winning players sometimes. I mean, it happens. It's gambling. People win as well. Having a big account sharing that loss with you, because it evens out a bit instead of having a lot of small accounts where you are more taking the risk.
Yeah. So Sami, you mentioned also in the article that there's a trend taking place now in between the affiliates, where many affiliates are moving towards the gray and the unregulated space where the operators are more inclusive when it comes to working with affiliates. And you mentioned here before the podcast, you know, walking into Sigma, for example, the conference, you see that these are the operators and the suppliers that are really like dominating the conference right now. So I want to start asking in two parts. First and foremost, when a tier one operator or a regulated operator in general are including these more predatory terms, or they're making it more difficult to work with them and so on, why would, I mean, it must be difficult for any affiliate to trust that this operator is there for the long term. And I would assume that, as you point out in the article, that clearly many of the affiliates would seek themselves into the unregulated space where they feel more safe. Like, what is the reason? I mean, you are working with regulated operators, for example. Mm-hmm. Is there any reason for you to continue to do this other than, you know, out of the kind of goodness of your heart, let's say, and to try to do the right thing these days? And where do you think this leads to in the long term?
It's a good question. I mean, if you look at we take for example the Swedish market, which yeah. where we operate as well as an affiliate, the offering for players is much more interesting in the black market. You have several bonuses, you have loyalty programs, VIP programs, and the player values are higher. The affiliates or the operators are paying. The black market operators are paying more to affiliate. So, yeah, I guess I don't have a really good answer to that. I guess you have to somehow think that there is some trust there anyway. If you send these operators, these licensed operators, good traffic and you are a good marketing partner, then you have to assume that they will honor the partnership as well. But you are a bit more aware that you can't count on a revenue share deal to last forever. So maybe you need to spread your risks a bit. Yeah. If you manage to get to a certain level, maybe you focus a bit more on, for example, hybrid deals. You secure it a bit with having some CPA on top, yeah. and maybe lower the rev share deal because it's not as reliable as it used to be.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think we can all notice this in the industry now that kind of the unregulated space is really exploding. There's some huge operators that are coming to life with massive exponential growth at the moment, kind of like what we saw, you know, back in the days when we moved to Malta. There was that hyper growth in the industry. Mm-hmm. And it feels like there's like a second wave of that happening at the moment. do you think, I mean, it seems like, you know, more affiliates are moving to this space. Like, what will turn it around? Let's say, is there anything that the operators can do to, even when operating in this difficult regulated environment with high costs and high taxation rates? Like, is there anything the operators, do you think, should do in order to instill more trust with their affiliates to kind of get them back into the regulated space?
I think it's a bit broader than that. More than what the operators can do is that maybe the whole industry have to have a bit of a look, because running an licensed locally licensed casino nowadays is really difficult, because you have the payment costs, yeah. the transaction costs, which has increased 4 or 5 times what they used to be.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
You're paying the game studios a lot of money. Then you have the affiliate costs, and then you're also paying a lot of taxes. And on top of paying those taxes, you're also very strict on what you can do. So to be able to make an interesting offering to players and affiliates, I think the regulators needs to have a look a bit at the situation as well, and see are we really doing what the objective is here, which is to have a good high channelization rate and offer a safe product but also competitive. Because as long as the black market is much more interesting for the players, it's going to be very hard for the locally licensed operators to compete with them.
Yeah, for sure. And can we talk a bit as well of the evolution of affiliate deals, Sami? So you've been in the industry, again, for a very long time. You've seen the this shift taking place. How did affiliation deals work, you know, 5-10 years ago, and how have they evolved until the present day?
Yeah, I mean, if you focus on online casino, so if we go back to say 2011-12, when things really started taking off, affiliates were happy earning about 45% rev share deals. And I'm talking about the big affiliates. And the operators had nice margins. The admin fees that were deducted before the revenue share deals were paid was quite low, because everybody was in a good state, a good place. Yep. Everybody was making money. But then with more operators coming in, affiliates started noticing that maybe this traffic is worth even more that we're charging. So they started experimenting a bit. It went to 50% rev share, and then CPA came in, and then there was in some cases some fixed fees, some listing fees and monthly fees on top of the hybrid deal. And it kind of escalated from there. And then you had affiliates that used to be, there used to be more mid-size affiliates, and some of them took action and started an M&A activities, and they grew through their own efforts and also by buying other companies. And to get their return on investment, they increased the fees that they charged operators. So all that contributed to where we are today.
Hmm. Interesting. And you know, considering the difficulties that affiliates have today, especially operating in the regulated environment, is there a feeling that, like, in order to, like, if you're not a massive kind of tier one affiliate, if you will, that in order to survive, you kind of have to work in the gray black space today? Is it possible to sustain yourself in the regulated space as a small affiliate? This is perhaps also a question for you personally.
Yeah, running around. Well, I think it depends on what kind of strategy you have here. But if you look at it a bit long term, there is a way to be profitable working with only locally licensed operators. I definitely think so. But if you're looking for a quicker buck, then you probably do both or go on the black market.
Yeah. And you know, now compared to 5 or 10 years ago, how difficult is it to be profitable as an affiliate?
Well, the affiliates always have better margins than operators. Yeah. The difficulty is to get to a certain level where you have the traffic. So
yeah. So Sami, how difficult is it to start off from scratch as an affiliate today, say, versus 5 or 10 years ago? Because I remember, you know, in the Betsson days when I worked over there, in the affiliate department, the affiliate managers were always saying, you know, God damn it, you know, we should have become affiliates, but now it's too late. You know, this was 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. they could see how much money they're making and so on and so forth. But yeah, how difficult is it to start from scratch today as an affiliate in this industry compared to X amount of years ago?
Yeah, I don't think I would recommend it to anybody who's completely new to this.
Yeah.
It's very difficult because you're competing with some big companies that maybe have a 10-year head start on you, and you're not only competing with or against the affiliates, you're also competing with operators, because they're also putting more effort on their SEO nowadays. One thing that they're doing is that they're moving away a bit from affiliates and putting some effort hiring good SEO people that make your brand rank higher, which you can see with some brands that they have started taking some good keywords that used to be affiliate dominated. So yeah, I would say that it's very hard, and you can't really copy paste what everyone else is doing. You have to try to come up with something of your own, and something that you think players might enjoy and like.
Yeah, so it's kind of the key to success these days is to kind of find a very specific niche. If you're coming in as a new affiliate these days with like more limited resources, it's not like you can't do a shotgun approach, let's say, and try to conquer Europe, for example. You need to zone in on a geography and then zone in on a bit of a niche within that geography, perhaps. Is that
Exactly.
true?
That that's how I would put it as well. Either focus on a special market or something that maybe others haven't done yet.
Yeah, brilliant. And so, looking again to the black market, Sami, what are your thoughts there? And like for yourself, you know, I mean, you must be asking yourself the question sometimes. You wake up 3 in the morning and you're like, why am I pursuing this like really difficult regulated strategy? Like, do you sometimes consider to switching yourself? And where do you think this is all heading? Because I suppose one perspective here as well is that, you know, on the one hand, tier one regulated operators are not as lenient as they used to be working with affiliates. And so there's a trust issue there that comes from that. But on the other hand, in the black market, while they are offering great deals now, can you trust those operators in the long term, right? So it's not perhaps clear cut where to choose. Like, is this something you think a lot about? Like, where do you think this is all heading?
Well, if you again, we can look at the Swedish market that we know well, but this probably applies to many different locally regulated markets. Is that the Swedish Gambling Authority has a has an ambition to have a 90% channelization rate, but now, for example, ATG, a big operator in Sweden, they made their own research and came up with an estimated channelization rate for online casino between 59 and 74%.
Oh, wow.
So, what I think will happen is that the as long as the regulator doesn't see what's happening, the black market will just grow. Because the locally licensed operators are not happy where this is heading. And the recent action from the Swedish government is that they might instead increase the tax on these brands from 18% to 22 or more. And that will put even more strain on the locally licensed operators. And when you look at other companies that look at these markets like Sweden, would they want to go in there as a licensed, locally licensed brand with all these difficulties and even higher tax? Or is the other side, the black market, more interesting and profitable? Probably.
It's interesting to see how the industry is becoming more polarized, where certain operators are becoming highly regulated and they're moving much more towards that space. Like, I think what happened with Entain now recently is an interesting case in that, where they have to pay their dues for old sins as well, and it's by the UKGC, and it really sends a message to many of the big tier one operators that you know, you better get your kind of act in order if you want to operate in the regulated space in the first place. Whereas then on the other side, there's the kind of tier two and the new emerging operators that are avoiding the regulated space as much as they can, and you have this like polarization where the industry is really dividing in two. And I'm really curious to see how it all will play out eventually. If you know, I remember back in the 2000s when the poker boom started, and in the beginning of the poker boom, all the kind of dot-com poker sites were wildly successful and mainstream brands and so on. And then the U.S. lawmakers, you know, put the hammer down and kind of closed the market from nowhere, from one day to the other. And I wonder if that is going to happen at some point again to the black market operators. The difference now, of course, is that, you know, the transactions is via Bitcoin and not via traditional currency. So, you know, what can they do and so on.
Well, you could see it as in two ways. It's either the perfect storm for a bit of a disaster happening, or you can see it as a golden opportunity, depending on which angle you have on this.
Yeah, that's true. So, final question for you here today, Sami. Going forward now for yourself, like, how do you navigate this space now? What's your goal as an affiliate now going forward, and what do you plan to do to kind of strengthen these relationships that you have with your operators and try to come to a more sustainable place where, yeah, on the one hand is the affiliate perspective where like we want to work hard for our partners and but we also need to have sustainable terms in place. And then there's the operator perspective, which is, yes, we understand that, but we have to cut costs. Like, how do you marry the two? How do you get closer? How do you work for the long term here?
Well, you need to be aware of that the whole industry is evolving and things change. So the way these agreements used to be done are now different. So not only us, but other affiliates as well. They just need to be aware that maybe you should spread your risks a bit. So if you have a lot of traffic, you don't send everything to one place. So you send them to different operators. And when you negotiate your deals, you need to keep in mind that maybe this revenue share deal won't last forever. So maybe you need to back it up with a bit of CPA as well. But there also needs to be a bit of the whole ecosystem needs to work, that the online casino needs to also be profitable. If payment methods are making money, you have the game studios making money, affiliates making money, but the online casinos are losing money all the
Right.
time. That's not sustainable either.
No.
So there needs to be some kind of shift where everybody's winning in that case.
Yeah, exactly. Brilliant, Sami. Well, thank you so much for bringing this perspective to light. Again, there's this trend that is emerging now in the industry where it's kind of like certain operators are becoming more and more highly regulated, others are moving towards the gray, and there's consequences throughout the ecosystem here. So it's really interesting to hear the affiliate perspective on this question. Sami, it's been great to be your friend for many years, and
Likewise.
look forward to continuing this conversation. Thank
Thank
you.
you. Thanks so much. Thanks a lot, Pierre.
Thank you. Awesome. Boom. Ha ha ha.